caused by religion's misguided men. There is no holiness in war, only death's unholy stain. God is only love, His love is pure. Yeah. The word of God can never justify revenge. Vengeance belongs to Him and Him alone. We must all seize our jihad and embrace our enemies.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
German-owned T-Mobile has been accused of discriminating against union workers in the United States. When the FCC required Singular to sell a portion of its California network to T-Mobile, 100 unionized workers were fired. In order to get their jobs back, these workers must apply through a hiring agency, which makes them ineligible for union membership and employment benefits. No legal charges have yet been filed. International protests against the treatment have been voiced by Union Network International, an organization that represents more than 15 million workers worldwide. Stateside, the Communication Workers of America have filed a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board.
Crude oil prices fell to a two-month low on Tuesday in part due to the Nigerian Oil Workers Union halting a planned general strike. The Nigerian government made an 11th-hour concession to increase domestic fuel subsidies by 7%. Niyi Shomade is a Nigerian environmentalist. He says impoverished Nigerians can't afford fuel because of IMF and World Bank policies. 70% of Nigerians live on less than a dollar a day.
The IMF and the World Bank structural adjustment programs tells us to reduce our so-called subsidies. The problem is when you do the research, you'll find that the cost of petroleum in Nigeria compared to what we're selling it at is actually very low. And we're approximately the fifth largest oil producer in the world, and yet we're paying very high prices for gasoline.
Although deemed illegal by the courts, the Nigeria Labor Congress says it won't hesitate to issue a new strike order if the government doesn't come through with its promise to reduce fuel prices within 1 week.
As Delta, American Airlines, U.S. Airways, and United Airlines threaten to cut jobs or diminish pay, flight attendants aren't taking the decisions lying down. The heads of the Association of Flight Attendants have unanimously voted to authorize a strike, saying that they are upset over how their members are being treated. Union members must now approve the strike before a walkout can occur. The AFA charges that United Airlines and U.S. Airways are taking advantage of their bankruptcy status to cancel union contracts and impose massive pay cuts. United says that an employee strike at this time would mean the end for the airline.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. When it comes to benefits as part of worker pay packages, 75% of union workers in America have health benefits compared with just 49% of non-union workers. 69% of union workers have short-term disability coverage, while only 30% of non-union workers have that. 82% of union workers in America have life insurance compared with only 51% for non-union workers.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
The dumbest thing that a political party can do is to abandon its reason for existence and try to become a pale imitation of the other party. Yet this is exactly what some of the so-called political pros are prescribing for Democrats. The latest conventional wisdom from these insiders is that Bush's election is a triumph of moral values over such big issues as war and the economy. George W., they say, bluntly professes that he's guided by God, thus causing evangelical Christians to vote for him, even against their economic self-interest. Therefore, they assert, Democrats can't win until they get like George and start appealing to Christian fundamentalists. Nonsense. Certainly, the working people and poor folks who are in those churches must be appealed to by Democrats, but not like George, not on the narrow basis used by Republicans, God, guns, and gays. Rather, Democratic candidates must openly profess, by word and deed, the deeply held fundamental moral values that the party was created to represent: fairness, justice, and opportunity for all. This is high moral ground, which the Bushites routinely desecrate with virtually all of their policies and actions. Yet it's ground that Democrats senselessly have abandoned. It's not that evangelical working-class Christians voted against their own economic self-interest on November 2nd, but that the Kerry campaign had failed to appeal to it with any clarity or credibility. The candidate himself was aloof, elitist, and surrounded by upscale professionals, and the campaign gave little sense that a Kerry administration would be an FDR-JFK-LBJ champion of America's underdogs. This is Jim Hightower saying, yes, Democrats must talk more directly about values, the core Democratic values that make the party important. These are not only the values that founded America, but in church terms, they're the values preached and practiced by Jesus.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me.
Guacamole.
You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get ScorePower from Equifax.com. ScorePower gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get ScorePower at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. Score power at Equifax.com.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, it looks like she's starting to nail it down. Ira, our erstwhile engineer, phone operator, chief cook, and bottle washer here, is trying to get Bev Harris on the line. It may take us a while. When I talked to her this morning, she's down in Florida. She was going through the trash behind one of the election offices and found the original ballot receipts, the original printouts from the machines, the ones that were actually signed by the elections officers the night of the election, November 2nd, she compared them with the printouts that had been given to her the day before by the people in Fallujah County in Florida, and lo and behold, the originals showed far fewer votes for George W. Bush than the later printout. And so anyhow, I was talking to her about this morning on the phone, and she's telling it, you know, how they actually have this bag of trash, and the sheriff showed up, and they had to quarantine it, and she's filing a Freedom of Information Act for a bag of trash, and it was in the box going to the shredder. And anyhow, in the middle of our phone conversation, she's like, I got to go. The police are here. So we're going to try and get to Bev on the phone here. It's we've got 3 hours. Ira just tried to call her, got her voicemail, which means that she's tied up someplace. Hopefully not literally. But Bev Harris down there in Florida, in Fallujah County, going around to the polling places, trying to get the, what are called the polling place tapes. These are the printouts from the voting machines. And on the night of the election, they get printed out, and then they get signed by the officials. And that's the official receipt. That's the official count. And sure enough, Bev has already found a significant smoking gun, as it were. So far, she's only seen 20 of them. There's about 120 in total, I guess, for this county. 20 to 30 of them are missing. Of the 20 that she's been able to find originals for and compare them with the later ones that were printed out and given to her when she asked for it under Freedom of Information Act filing, And, of course, the later ones being the numbers that were submitted to Glenda Hood, who certified the vote yesterday, as I recall, for the state of Florida. The actual originals signed by the voting officials have far fewer votes for George W. Bush. And I said, well, you know, could it be that, you know, there's just random errors? And she said, no, in every single case, the errors are to the benefit of Bush and other Republican candidates. They've got other problems with memory card numbers being switched, comparisons of the same machine to a different. It just goes on and on and on. It's really quite remarkable. And I will just leave it at that at this moment, because we're going to try and get her on and have her tell the story. And if we can't get her on by the end of the day, then I'll revisit this in the third hour of the program and give you all the details that I got from discussing this with her. This morning, we're going to be following up on it this afternoon. We've got some calls into some other folks down there in Florida trying to get a hold of some of the election officials, trying to you know, double and triple fact check all this stuff. But you know, the bottom line, Bev Harris of blackboxvoting.org, looks like she's found something. For example, in Precinct 215, an African-American precinct, the votes were off by hundreds in favor of George W. Bush and other Republicans, she says. And, which is right? The polling tape Volusia gave to Black Box Voting, specially printed on November 15th without signatures, or the ones with signatures printed on November 2nd with up to 8 signatures per tape? And, you know, anyhow, she... On it goes. We'll get into that in more detail. But welcome to the program. The 17th of November, it's Wednesday, 517 days since... Joe Wilson's wife, Valerie Plame, was outed by a traitor in the White House. We are going to visit the archives, by the way. We're going to hear a little clip from a man who was the world's most famous radio talk show host, listened to by over 40 million people, Father Coughlin, talking about war and how the media... Well, I'll let him speak. We'll get to that in a little bit. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to call in. Our website, tomhartmann.com. You can click the live chat button. It'll take you to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. You can drop into the chat room there where it's already full of folks having the usual interesting, fascinating, intelligent, sometimes outrageous, often funny, and always informative conversation. Opponents of a measure to add slot machine here. Now, it's not just liberals saying, hey, what happened to the vote? Here's the conservatives who are opposed to the slot machines. They're demanding a recount in Broward County. They're saying there's something strange about a batch of 78,000 absentee ballots where 94% of the ballots, which were not correctly counted on Election Day, were in favor of amending the Constitution, which exceeds the countywide approval margin of 70%. Representative Randy Johnson on Monday said it's million to one that this could just somehow happen by itself. That 78,000 votes isn't enough to flip over the thing. It won by 120,000 votes. But they think that it could narrow the gap enough, according to the Associated Press article by Jackie Halifax today. It could narrow the gap enough to open the door to a statewide recount. So you've got the opponents of gambling here saying, hey, we need a recount. We want to. Greg Gumma on UPI, of course, UPI, it's interesting. UPI used to be this really solid news organization, and they got bought by Reverend Moon. Not the Associated Press, the United Press International got bought by Reverend Moon. But they seem to still be reporting, you know, sort of like, I mean, they haven't gone off the edge like the Washington Times, which is also owned by Reverend Moon, has. It's become kind of the official publication of the White House. But in this article, Election 2004, Lingering Suspicions by UPI, exit polling by Edison Media Research and Mitofsky International, which created the national election poll for ABC, AP, CBS, CNN, Fox, and NBC, had shown Kerry leading by 3 percentage points in Florida and 4 points in Ohio. Kind of lending credence to what Bev is finding in the trash down there. Kerry ended up losing Florida by 5.2%, with Bush running ahead of his 2000 performance in 58 of the state's 67 counties. In Ohio, the margin was 2.5%. This is an 8.2% spread between the exit polls and the results. That's more than double the article notes. More than double the standard error rate. In Ohio, the spread is 6.5%. That's also well above the standard error rate for these kind of things. And he notes, in Ohio, as in Florida 4 years ago, a large number of spoiled ballots were cast on punch cards, 54% of which were cast by black voters. According to statisticians investigating the issue for Verified Voting, a group formed by a Stanford University professor to assess electronic voting. They've collected 31,000 reports of alleged election abnormalities. Nice way of saying the possibility of fraud. 31,000 reports. And, of course, in the poor communities, in the black communities, that's where they put the machines that are most likely to break down, the most likely to have what they call high spoilage rates. Our quote for the day from Robert F. Kennedy, few will have the greatness to bend history itself, but each of us can work to change a small portion of events, and in the total of all those acts will be written the history of this generation. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Let's take a quick call here. Clark in St. Louis, Missouri on the line. Hey, Clark, what's on your mind?
Oh, I was just a couple of points I wanted to touch on. First of all, when the election was, or the campaigning was going on, I was really looking for a reason to vote for John Kerry. I really wanted one. Other than those who hated Bush, I was looking for a reason to do it. Even listening to the debate, everything was prefaced with a bad thing that George Bush did, but nothing that I could find, and I tried to be as open-minded as possible, ever gave me a reason, and the one thing that I did hear was during the one debate about how would Kerry solve the problem in Iraq, and his response was basically to send in extra troops. Just prior to that, he had accused the Republicans.
Clark, you're doing a great job of reciting the Republican talking points. What's the point of your call?
Well, I just couldn't find a reason to vote for. All I got was, I have a plan, but I never heard the plan, and I wanted to hear the plan, but
yeah.
Heard the plans all the time.
Okay, so, you know, got it. Thanks a lot. You know, you couldn't find a reason to vote for him. I could find a lot of them. You know, he wanted to extend, he thinks health care is a right. George Bush thinks that health care is a privilege. If you were born into a wealthy family, you can have health care. If you're poor, tough luck. John Kerry thinks it's a right. I agree. I think it's a right. John Kerry thinks that public education should be a right, including making it easier for people to get into college. George Bush thinks if you're born into a rich family like he was, yeah, cool. But otherwise, hey, you're out of luck. I mean, the list just goes on and on. Why it is that the RNC, I mean, we've still got one guy, I actually had a conversation with this guy who was actually paid to participate in our bulletin board by some conservative think tank to get the word out, right, about George W. Bush or the horrors of John Kerry or whatever. And on it goes and on it goes. Sad. Sad. Clark, if you couldn't find a reason to vote for John Kerry, you simply weren't paying attention, and that's pretty pathetic. Larger than expected rise in U.S. debt limit is proposed. This in today's Wall Street Journal. This really concerns me, and this I think should concern everybody. One of the things that's going to be discussed in Congress this week is going to have to be discussed because they're just playing games around this thing, is that we have to borrow more money. We got to borrow a lot more money. A whole lot more money. And again, not to re-debate the election of 2004 because, you know, I'm pretty sure it's over. But nonetheless, Kerry was saying, let's not blow the deficit. And Cheney, of course, his famous quote was, you know, we learned from Ronald Reagan that deficits don't matter. So, anyhow, Republicans have calculated that they need an increase of $690 billion in the debt ceiling, but now they're going to go for an $800 billion boost, according to today's Wall Street Journal. That increase would be the third in as many years and bring the debt limit to $8.184 trillion. That's more than 37% higher, says David Rogers in today's Wall Street Journal, 37% higher than the ceiling President Bush inherited when he took office in 2001. Think about that. 37% higher. And this, I mean, this is a guy who has run up more debt than every other president in history, including Ronald Reagan, who was the master of it. Ronald Reagan ran up such a huge debt in his first term that he raised taxes each one of the last 4 years of his presidency just to keep from driving us off the edge of the cliff. Be interesting to see if Bush is going to do the same. Apparently not. And, you know, Reagan's policies led to this horrible mess that George Bush inherited that ended up getting Bill Clinton elected. And here we are. This same track. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004.
fearlessly exploring the truth of the day. Here's Tom Hartman.
We're electing Georgie Bushy, cause the lives are soft and cushy. We're electing Georgie Bushy.
Wait your turn now, don't be pushy.
We're electing Georgie Bushy.
The billionaires for Bush are at it again. 24 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. It's funny. It's usually Rush Limbaugh complaining about people sitting in rooms with lists of talk shows to call just to make points, not even listening to the program. But Tony in Grand Rapids, I'm sure, is listening. Hey, Tony, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. I missed your show yesterday, so I didn't get to hear your thoughts on Roy Cerrone being our new Secretary of State.
I didn't get into it that much yesterday, but...
I was watching Fox News yesterday, I guess, to further my depression. But they're talking like she was his godsend as National Security Advisor, and she'll be even better at Secretary of State. And my memory could be serving me wrong, or it could be a fact-twisting liberal, but I think we were attacked. She was National Security Advisor, weren't we?
We were attacked, and she had over 100 meetings prior from the time they came into office until we were attacked. Over 100 meetings having to do with national security, and only at two of those meetings was terrorism even raised as a topic. She was told by Sandy Berger, and Sandy Berger told me this, you know, personally. I mean, that she was told by Sandy Berger, who is, you know, was the national security advisor for Clinton when he was leaving and she was coming in, that, you know, Bin Laden's going to be your number one concern. That we've tried to kill him, we've tried to catch him, we missed him by 30 minutes. We hit him with a cruise missile. We thought we got him, we didn't. You need to be watching for this guy. Awful stuff is going to happen. You know, we stopped this bombing plot in 2000. There's more to come, and she didn't. She just totally dropped the ball, and 9/11 happened. Yeah, absolutely.
And now she'll be representatives around the world. That's awesome.
Yeah, and the sad thing about making her the head of the State Department is that the Secretary of State, of all the people in the United States government, the Secretary of State is the one that most appropriately should be a career diplomat, and most appropriately should be somebody who knows the protocol of international relations, knows the language of international diplomacy, is respected in capitals around the world, gets along with people around the world, and doesn't have a lot of baggage. You know, doesn't have a lot of it's like during the Vietnam era, you wouldn't want the Secretary of State to be somebody who was an architect of Vietnam, for example. Well, here you got Condi, who was, you know, one of the leading architects of the Iraq invasion, which has turned the rest of the world against us, and they've got her going into Secretary of State. She lied to the 9/11 Commission. She tried to mislead them. It wasn't until they said, what was the name of that August 6th daily presidential briefing, that we finally figured out that she had dropped the ball. I mean, in my opinion, she is incompetent, and she has been dishonest, and that's it. Not my person. Tony, thanks for the call, and thanks for raising that. I do appreciate it. I want to get back to this debt ceiling thing and just wrap this up, because this is a big deal. And the reason it's a big deal is because it's going to hit us hard. It's going to hit us really. It already is. We're talking about really damaging the economy of the United States. We are going to see the dollar further fall. Gold is up to $340. Oil around $45 to $50 a barrel. What this really means is that the dollar is going down. The dollar has gone down, almost 30% against the euro, I believe, since George Bush has become president. And here now in this budget, where they're going to be asking for an increase in the debt ceiling, they also note in the Wall Street Journal today, domestic programs are likely to be held to a growth rate of just 1 to 2% over 2004 spending levels. Well, we have an inflation rate that's at least 3%, and if you look at the last months and you annualize it, it's like 20%. I mean, it's like really scary. And, you know, what it's going to end up, I think that we're going to see inflation like we had, you know, when the last time Nixon tried this, you know, when Nixon tried to pay for a war, the war in Vietnam, you know, with borrowed money and deflated the currency. And we were seeing interest rates pushing 15-20%, and they had to get rid of the usury laws because they went up through the roof of 10%. And they're also proposing cuts in the small business loan program. But these are actual, you know, level funding, or slightly level funding, is really a form of cutting. And now the European Union steps in on this. I'll tell you about this right after the break. This, you know, what this scenario portends for us is truly concerning. 29 minutes past the hour.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. In fact, they're filthy. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. My newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Orrick XL uses triple-wall disposable filter bags. Try my new vacuum free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Orrick, the clean alternative to bagless vacuums.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
German-owned T-Mobile has been accused of discriminating against union workers in the United States. When the FCC required Singular to sell a portion of its California network to T-Mobile, 100 unionized workers were fired. In order to get their jobs back, these workers must apply through a hiring agency, which makes them ineligible for union membership and employment benefits. No legal charges have yet been filed. International protests against the treatment have been voiced by Union Network International, an organization that represents more than 15 million workers worldwide. Stateside, the Communication Workers of America have filed a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board.
Crude oil prices fell to a two-month low on Tuesday, in part due to the Nigerian Oil Workers Union halting a planned general strike. The Nigerian government made an 11th-hour concession to increase domestic fuel subsidies by 7%. Niyi Shomade is a Nigerian environmentalist. He says impoverished Nigerians can't afford fuel because of IMF and World Bank policies. 70% of Nigerians live on less than a dollar a day.
The IMF and the World Bank structural adjustment programs tells us to reduce our so-called subsidies. The problem is when you do the research, you'll find that the cost of petroleum in Nigeria compared to what we're selling it at is actually very low. And we're approximately the fifth largest oil producer in the world, and yet we're paying very high prices for gasoline.
Although deemed illegal by the courts, the Nigeria Labor Congress says it won't hesitate to issue a new strike order if the government doesn't come through with its promise to reduce fuel prices within 1 week.
As Delta, American Airlines, U.S. Airways, and United Airlines threaten to cut jobs or diminish pay, flight attendants aren't taking the decisions lying down. The heads of the Association of Flight Attendants have unanimously voted to authorize a strike, saying that they are upset over how their members are being treated. Union members must now approve the strike before a walkout can occur. The AFA charges that United Airlines and U.S. Airways are taking advantage of their bankruptcy status to cancel union contracts and impose massive pay cuts. United says that an employee strike at this time would mean the end for the airline.
Here's today's Val Bob report. When it comes to benefits as part of worker pay packages, 75% of union workers in America have health benefits compared with just 49% of non-union workers. 69% of union workers have short-term disability coverage, while only 30% of non-union workers have that. 82% of union workers in America have life insurance compared with only 51% for non-union workers.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
As I went walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway.
And welcome back. And that skyway, part of the commons, paid for by you and me. And what are they going to privatize that next? They're privatizing our vote. We're still trying to get Bev Harris on the line here. It's you know, maybe the sheriffs have got her in the back seat of the police car. I don't know. She's a courageous woman down there. Blackboxvoting.org, her website, if you want more information or you want to send her $5. They're doing some just great work. It's clear the greenback has come unhinged. compared with the world's other currencies. This from the finance minister of France, Nicolas Sarkozy. He says, now it's up to the Americans to respond. The Europeans are very concerned because the dollar is falling. It means the euro is rising against it. Which, you know, the silver lining, I suppose, is it makes American goods cheaper for people of the rest of the world. So, you know, we can export. Our exports will go up and our imports will go down, which will narrow our trade deficit. And there's a lot of good reasons to narrow the trade deficit. The problem is, though, that basically what we're doing is we're selling off America at fire sale prices. We have gone from being one of the world's largest and most powerful manufacturing, you know, fully developed, top-of-the-line economies to being a banana republic economy. You look at what's going in and out of our ports, and what is going out are raw materials, lumber, minerals, you know, iron, scrap iron, scrap paper, hides. I mean, just, you know, raw grain, cotton, and what's coming in? Finished clothing, computers, cars, consumer products, anything you can buy in Walmart. If Walmart were a country, it would be the 10th largest trading partner for China. It's and so anyhow, we, as a result of the insane economic policies of this administration, the dollar is falling, and the debt, and they're having to raise the debt ceiling. Now, what does this mean? It means that the government is soaking up more and more of the available cash out there that could be loaned to anybody for any purpose, right? You know, people who want to invest, they'll invest by lending money and making money on the interest. Our government soaks up more and more of that, so there's less and less of it available for people to buy homes, to start businesses with. And the result, of course, is that the price of money goes up. Because the government, it gets harder and harder for the government to borrow, and so they have to offer higher and higher interest rates. And so the interest rates domestically have to go up. They've doubled now in the last 6 months from, you know, the Federal Reserve rate from 1% to 2%. It's still very low, but they're going up, and they're heading scary high, I suspect. And this debt ceiling, I mean, this is a wall that we actually hit in the first week of October. But Jon Snow did just an admirable job of shuffling numbers around so that it didn't have to be voted on until after the election, so that this didn't come up as an issue during the election. The absolute screaming, outrageous financial fiscal irresponsibility of the Bush administration did not come up as an issue. He did it by things like suspending investment in the Civil Service Retirement and Disability Fund. I mean, this is incredible. When Bush took office, the projections were that we'd have a $5.6 trillion surplus. Now we're projecting a $3 trillion deficit, and that's on top of a it's now going to go to $8 trillion debt. And all this so that more billionaires can have tax cuts. At least half of it, according to the General Accounting Office, at least half of the deficit is a direct result of George Bush's tax cuts. That he wants to make permanent, he thinks are just great things. And, and you or I, if we want to borrow money, if we want to put our kids through college, if you've got an adjustable interest rate loan on your house, no matter what it costs, get it at a fixed rate as quickly as you can. Because this thing is going through the roof, I'm telling you. These people have, it is just over the top. And to think that you can control import and export, you know, the trade, that you can control our balance of payment or our trade deficit, that we're buying more than we're selling. And the problem with that, of course, is that foreigners then end up with a lot of extra cash, a lot of extra dollars in their pocket. What are they going to buy with it? Well, they have to buy something here, so they buy our businesses. 5.5% of all American business now, in dollar terms, is owned by foreigners. We're selling off our country in order to accommodate George Bush's debt spending spree, his tax breaks for his wealthy buddies, You know, he looks out at the black tie crowd and he says, "Ah, the haves and the have-mores. Some people call you the elite. I call you my base." So that we could do that, and so that George could spend a lot of money and, you know, have his war and try and goose the economy enough that he could get himself reelected. And the bill is coming due. The bill is coming due. Pat in Wyoming on the line, 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. Hey, Pat, what's on your mind today?
Good morning, Tom. To further exemplify what you're saying, it seems to me late yesterday I caught the very tail end of something in the news about, I'm not sure of this, the FCC has done some kind of a research into the Fannie Mae issue.
Oh, yeah.
And found that they're millions of dollars short in reporting
billions.
What their true readings are.
Billions, not millions, billions. I believe it's about $8.5 billion. Yeah, Fannie Mae is Fannie Mae's in trouble. And, you know, I don't think it's necessarily in going down the tubes trouble. The Pension Guarantee Corporation is in going down the tubes trouble. That's a real problem. But and thanks for the call, Pat. You're fading out there. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac is apparently okay, but who knows? And the Federal Pension Guarantee Corporation, that's the one that they're projecting by 2010 may be bankrupt. And this is like the FDIC for pension funds. You know, the FDIC guarantees your bank investments. If you have a pension, a corporate pension, which the corporations are just, you know, trying to get rid of as fast as they can now. They're suing their employees. We talked about this several times in this program. You have a pension, and the company goes out of business, goes down the tubes, whatever. The government picks it up through this insurance program. And all the corporations that have pensions, they pay 1% into the fund. Well, there's so many corporations, since George Bush came into office, have felt free to dump their retirees. I mean, it's just become a wave. It's become the in thing to do. To crank up corporate profits, increase CEO salaries, pay greater dividends to your stockholders, and leave those who spent 20, 30, 40 years of their lives working for the corporation and helping it become profitable and successful, leave them out in the cold. So many companies have dumped their pensioners that the insurance agency, the Federal Pension Guarantee Corporation, is looking at bankruptcy within 6 years. Scary times. Scary times. I want to share with you just this one clip. This is Father Coughlin and talking about war. Father Coughlin was the original radio talk show host. This is back in the 19. This was actually from April 4th, 1939. And referring to World War One, and he also, of course, at that time, he didn't want us to get into World War Two. And he was just basically talking about war and the whole issue of how it happens. I'm just going to play about a minute and a half here of this clip. This guy had, you know, people think, you know, hey, you know, I've got 100,000, I got 300,000, I got 1 million, I got 6 million listeners. It's a big deal. Father Coughlin had 40 million listeners. Nobody has ever even come close. I mean, America just came to a halt, basically, when he came on the air. I believe his show was once a week. I don't think he did a daily show. I think it was weekly. I'll have to check on that. But it was a huge, major, big deal. And his thoughts on war.
We Americans have been victimized by some invisible forces which are determined to embroil us in war. Have these same forces employed their power, prestige, wealth, and influence in behalf of peace and prosperity to the same extent? I am confident that our 12 million unemployed would be working at profitable wages, and that our 22 million dolesters would enjoy economic freedom.
And, of course, the same is true today. If we were to spend even a fraction of the $200 billion we're spending in Iraq on any kind of, you know, in domestic infrastructure, building roads, building highways, we could put America back to work.
I do not remember in my lifetime when public officials and newspapers expended so much effort in propagandizing for war, nor do I recollect when so little publicity has been given for the removal of the causes of our domestic depression.
Who? Yeah, no, let's not talk, he says. Let's not talk about the real issues here. Who wants war, he asks?
Wants war?
Who wants war?
The millions of little children attending our schools. The neglected youth of our nation who are searching in vain for profitable jobs. And despairing of establishing a home of their own. The fathers and mothers whose chief concern always has been life and never death. The exploited masses of labor, victimized by prolific promises of politicians. Who wants war?
That's incredible. In fact, I'm just gonna go on and share another minute of this with you because it's just he really cranks this rant up, and we'll come back to it. In fact, later on in the month.
Oh, elsewhere, let us seek an answer to our question. When more than 95% of our population abhors the very sound of that word, war. And this is democracy. When 95% of our fellow citizens have their minds tortured, their emotions aroused, their passions agitated by no more than 5% of internationalistic warmongers and their publicity agents, whose main concern is not assisting America back to prosperity. If we are a democratic people, shall we permit ourselves to be used like putty in the hands of those responsible for the half-truths, the warmongering, which appear in our press?
Shall we? It's a good question. Anyhow, Father Coughlin, just in memorial, interesting little clip. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We had our NLP class yesterday, by the way. Got a couple of questions on that I want to answer. We're talking about George Lakoff. Should Canada indict Bush? This is amazing. The Toronto Star actually asking this question. We'll get to that in just a second. Let's take a phone call here. Jeff in Miami, Florida on the line. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. I'm just curious about your use of Father Coughlin, and while I certainly see what's going on in this country today as being an introduction of fascism into our country, he himself was a rabid anti-Semite.
Yeah, I know.
I don't think he's an example of somebody we want to emulate.
No, I'm not suggesting that. What's really interesting about Father Coughlin is that when he started out on the radio, He was very progressive. He ardently, aggressively campaigned for Roosevelt in 32. And by 38, 39, he had flipped. He had become an opponent of Roosevelt's. He was giving Roosevelt terrible troubles. I mean, this speech you just heard is part of it. He did not want the United States, along with Lindbergh and a bunch of, and most of the Republican Party, did not want the United States to go to war against Nazi Germany. Felt that it would be a terrible mistake. And then he started getting into these, as you say, anti-Semitic rants later in the 1940-41 about, oh, it's all the international bankers, you know, which was kind of code language for it's the Jews. And the Catholic Church pulled him off the air. But I just find it fascinating, the kind of history repeats itself stuff. And
only that I see that this war, which is nothing about which is everything about profit and nothing about national defense or anything related to it.
Well, and that's what he was saying about World War II, whether or not it was correct.
He had the picture wrong, because there you had a very significant military threat in the world.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
In this case, so Saddam Hussein's similarity to Adolf Hitler ended in 1991, when we basically disempowered him.
Oh, for sure.
Had we done that to Hitler in Czechoslovakia, then there wouldn't have been a World War II.
I think where Coughlin went wrong was assuming that World War II was a repeat of World War I.
Exactly.
I mean, can you tell me why we got into World War I?
No, World War I is so much more similar to what's going on today.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was England that was the imperialist corporate fascist force at the time.
Yeah.
And now we have the United States playing that role. But I think World War II, we were on the side of right.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And ultimately, I suspect Coughlin agreed, but he had been pulled off the air by that point. You know?
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the call. And you know, it's important to set the record straight. Most people I know who voted for Bush did so. Elwin sends me a note because they trusted him, not because of any logical reason. Does this trust have anything to do with kinesthetics? I'm not sure what that word means. We were talking yesterday about people being visual, auditory, and kinesthetic, and that if you're going to create a political campaign, your main message has to be anchored in the kinesthetic language, that is, in language that speaks to feelings. Straight ahead, on point, solid, steady, resolve, things like that. And that's what Bush did so well in this last campaign. And so, that was my point, that it has nothing to do with logic. It anchors into the limbic brain, the mammalian brain, which is a nonverbal part of the brain, where our, you know, feelings are, our raw feelings are. And if you can anchor into that part of the brain, you can cause a person to behave, you know, to vote completely against their own logic. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information, available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots, organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a wind feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. On Friday in Santa Cruz, California, 45 people turned out for a solidarity rally in support of embattled workers at Sunshine Villa. Wind correspondent Vinny Lombardo has more.
Santa Cruz should be where?
Sunshine Villa is there.
Yolanda Moya has worked at Sunshine Villa for more than 3 years as a certified nursing assistant. Since February, Moya has been a key organizer in the SEIU contract drive. She says workers at Sunshine Villa are underpaid and receive too few health benefits for the heavy workload.
Many times we were short staffing.
Workers also complain of mistreatment by Sunshine Villa managers. Moya says the situation results in poor service to the residents. Recently, she discarded a table ornament that a resident had been chewing on. Moya says it was a health hazard. Managers apparently disagreed.
On October the 5th, they suspend me because I threw away a plastic vegetable from the garbage. And on October 12th, they terminate me with no reason.
Union reps believe Moya was fired for her organizing efforts. In July, workers at Sunshine Villa voted by a margin of 4-1 in favor of union representation. Joe Keffer, organizing director with the SEIU Local 415, says Sunshine Villa lawyers immediately filed 25 challenges with the regional director of the NLRB in Oakland. When these were dismissed, Sunshine Villa attorneys appealed to Washington. Last week, Keffer says the NLRB certified the union.
So now we can go in, start raising the issues, and we'll start negotiating our first contract. We expect that they're going to come in there and fight us aggressively and challenge every word that we put on the table.
Joan Bosworth, executive director of Sunshine Villa, snubbed repeated attempts for comments on this story. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Vinny Lombardo in Santa Cruz, California.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Heard newborn babies wailing like moaning doves, and old men with broken teeth stranded without love. Do I understand your question, man? Is it hopeless and forlorn? Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
And welcome back. Our program today brought to you by Small Dog Electronics. 1-800-511-MAX, 511-MACS. Eco Wine, the organic wine company, 1-888-ECOWINE, 1-888-ECOWINE. And Heal and Hollers, H-E-A-L-I-N hyphen H-O-L-L-E-R-S dot com. No G in the Healin', healin-hollers.com. On the internet, some really cool products there. George W. Bush, can you imagine if the New York Times were to publish a story that asks the question, when Tony Blair comes to visit America, should we arrest him for war crimes? I mean, just the very fact of it being published would be shocking. Well, here we have the Toronto Star, one of the largest newspapers in Canada, publishing this article in yesterday's paper. And here's the first two sentences, the first two paragraphs. When U.S. President George W. Bush arrives in Ottawa, probably later this year, should he be welcomed or should he be charged with war crimes? It's an interesting question. On the face of it, Bush seems a perfect candidate for prosecution under Canada's Crimes Against Humanity and War Crimes Act. This act was passed in 2000 to bring Canada's ineffectual laws in line with the rules of the new International Criminal Court. The war crimes are specifically include any breach of the 1949 Geneva Convention, such as torture, degradation, willfully depriving prisoners of war of their rights to a fair and regular trial, launching attacks, quote, in the knowledge that such attacks will cause incidental loss of life or injury to civilians, end quote, and deportation of persons from an area under occupation. They go on to say the case for the prosecution looks quite promising. First, there's the fact of the Iraq war itself. After 1945, Allied tribunals in Nuremberg and Tokyo, in an astonishing precedent, ruled that states no longer had the unfettered right to invade other countries and that leaders who started such conflicts could be tried for waging illegal war. Concurrently, the United Nations outlawed all aggressive wars except those authorized by the Security Council. Today, a strong case could be made that Bush violated the Nuremberg Principles by invading Iraq. Indeed, UN Secretary of State General Kofi Annan has already labeled the war illegal. Then they get into the way we conducted the war. This is amazing. This is Canada saying if George shows up, we may prosecute him as a war criminal. Aren't you proud of our president? We must respect the office. But the charging into an unnecessary war leading to the death of so many of our people and so many Iraqis is just wrong.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
German-owned T-Mobile has been accused of discriminating against union workers in the United States. When the FCC required Singular to sell a portion of its California network to T-Mobile, 100 unionized workers were fired. In order to get their jobs back, these workers must apply through a hiring agency, which makes them ineligible for union membership and employment benefits. No legal charges have yet been filed. International protests against the treatment have been voiced by Union Network International, an organization that represents more than 15 million workers worldwide. Stateside, the Communication Workers of America have filed a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board.
Crude oil prices fell to a two-month low on Tuesday, in part due to the Nigerian Oil Workers Union halting a planned general strike. The Nigerian government made an 11th-hour concession to increase domestic fuel subsidies by 7%. Niyi Shomade is a Nigerian environmentalist. He says impoverished Nigerians can't afford fuel because of IMF and World Bank policies. 70% of Nigerians live on less than a dollar a day.
The IMF and the World Bank structural adjustment programs tells us to reduce our so-called subsidies. The problem is when you do the research, you'll find that the cost of petroleum in Nigeria compared to what we're selling it at is actually very low. And we're approximately the fifth largest oil producer in the world, and yet we're paying very high prices for gasoline.
Although deemed illegal by the courts, the Nigeria Labor Congress says it won't hesitate to issue a new strike order if the government doesn't come through with its promise to reduce fuel prices within 1 week.
As Delta, American Airlines, U.S. Airways, and United Airlines threaten to cut jobs or diminish pay, flight attendants aren't taking the decisions lying down. The heads of the Association of Flight Attendants have unanimously voted to authorize a strike, saying that they are upset over how their members are being treated. Union members must now approve the strike before a walkout can occur. The AFA charges that United Airlines and U.S. Airways are taking advantage of their bankruptcy status to cancel union contracts and impose massive pay cuts. United says that an employee strike at this time would mean the end for the airline.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. When it comes to benefits as part of worker pay packages, 75% of union workers in America have health benefits compared with just 49% of non-union workers. 69% of union workers have short-term disability coverage, while only 30% of non-union workers have that. 82% of union workers in America have life insurance, compared with only 51% for non-union workers.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at AMIBA.net.
The wails of despair from progressive friends began pouring through my telephone very early on November 3rd. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? We'll have to move to Canada. I can't take another 4 years. It's so much to bear. I give up. Get a grip. Yes, the Bushites are back, and yes, it's going to be a miserable 4 years of grueling battles as they push their agenda of more war, more right-wing appointments to the courts, more giveaways to corporate power, more pollution, more cuts in public services, more assaults on Social Security, more secrecy, more shredding of our liberties, more, well, more Bush. But give up? Give up the fight for our essential American values, the values of fairness, justice, and opportunity for all? Surrender our nation's historic possibilities to these ideological zealots and corporate frontmen? Not a chance. What are we going to do? Fight back, that's what. First, recognize that we're fighting from strength and are tantalizingly close to winning. 49% of voters not only were with us in this election, but strongly with us, including more than 60% of young voters. Our grassroots organizing this time was stupendous, giving us new expertise, tools, and outreach to keep advancing. And you can count on the Bushites to give this year's non-voters and wary Bush voters more and more reasons to get active with us. Second, recognize that fighting for democracy is always a long-haul proposition. It took decades for America's founders to build enough public support to break with England. Likewise, the abolitionists, suffragists, populists, labor, civil rights, and other movements didn't achieve their historic successes on their first outing, and it'll require the same perseverance on our part. This is Jim Hightower saying, we've just begun to lift our country up. As Willie Nelson says, the early bird might get the worm, but it's the second mouse that gets the cheese.
The holiday taste of Sam's Club is here. Save time and money by shopping for all of your holiday business and home entertaining needs in one convenient stop. Visit the club this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, to sample a variety of delicious food perfect for any occasion. While you're there, you can pick up gifts for your employees, family, and friends. During this busy holiday season, don't miss your chance to shop, sample, and save on all of your business and home entertaining needs at the holiday taste of Sam's Club this weekend. Sam's Club, we're in business for small business.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, beaming down from outer space in the Sirius satellite system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, beaming into cable television systems in 29 states on cable radio network. Welcome back. 7 minutes past the hour, and we got her. We got her on the phone. It's Bev Harris. Hey, Bev.
Hey, Bev. Tom.
Great to have you here. Bev Harris of blackboxvoting.org, which is a website that you need to visit right now. And don't forget to click the contribute button. Bev, tell us what you're up to.
Well, we're just leaving Volusia County, Florida, and heading to another county in Florida to do more of the same.
Mm-hmm.
But we've just put Volusia on notice and their lawyers that they need to continue to keep a number of documents under seal, including all of the memory cards to the ballot boxes, including all of the signed poll tapes, because we found anomalies that were indicative of fraud.
Anomalies indicative of fraud. Now, that sounds kind of lawyerish. You mean you found, like, stinking evidence of...
Well, it was technically stinking, in fact, because okay. What they had done was thrown some of their polling tapes, which are the official record of the election, in the garbage.
Ah, yes, truly stinking.
These were the ones signed by the poll workers. They somehow were found by us in a trash bag, and by another group There's a group called Florida Fair Elections Coalition, and we actually found the garbage bag outside the elections warehouse containing signed polling place tapes. Understand that these are something we had done an official public records request for. And then outside the well, let me describe the scene for you.
Okay.
We then came back. Well, I asked for these polling place tapes. What they are is the official record of what the voting machine said on election night, and they're signed by the people who were there. So they're a nice, good, strong record with some real witnesses there. What happened is they fulfilled my request with something that was printed special for me on November 15th with no one's signature on it. And I said, well, that's not quite what I asked for.
Now, I'm assuming that what they gave you that was dated November 15th is also what Glenna Harris just certified as the actual vote?
Indeed.
Yeah, okay. So yeah. They gave you the numbers that they gave the state of Florida. And
right.
And then you went back and you said...
And then we decided to go to the warehouse where they kept the real thing. We surprised them there. And three people were sitting at a table, and I can't tell you what they were doing other than they were sitting at a table with the real ones and some pens. And
some pens?
I can't tell you because they immediately shoved us out and slammed the door.
Uh-huh.
But on the porch was a plastic garbage bag, and so I looked in it, and in there, lo and behold, were polling place tapes. So I did a public records request for the contents of the garbage bag.
You subpoenaed a garbage bag. That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, this has got to be some sort of historical record here. I mean, this is marvelous. Okay, so.
Yes, well, I have to tell you, too, I pulled something out of the garbage and a pen out of the garbage to write the public records request. I was in a hurry.
Amazing. Did you put, like, do not pass this, you know, yellow police tape around it and stuff?
Yeah. So I basically then they called, not one but two police cars showed up, and we all had a vigorous debate over the merits of my public records request.
Where you should spend the night, perhaps?
No, we ended up going to the elections office.
Uh-huh.
Well, we were sitting there comparing the real tapes with, or whatever they were, with the ones they had given us, and finding things missing and finding things not matching when one of the elections employees took a bin full of things that looked like garbage, that looked like polling tapes, actually, and passed by and went to disappeared out the back of the building. Well, about that time, a voting integrity advocate from Broward County by the name of Alan Brodsky and one from Florida Fair Elections from Volusia County decided it would be a good time to look at the garbage outside the elections office. And I must tell you that whatever was just taken out came right back in the front door and said, what are these polling place tapes doing in your dumpster?
Whoa. Whoa.
We got all this on videotape, of course.
This was in a second county? This was not in Volusia County? Or was this also in Volusia?
No. What they had is they had two facilities in Volusia County. They had the elections warehouse and the elections division, which is like the downtown courthouse area.
And so they're doing an Ollie North in both these places.
Yes. And there's a great film. And by the way, speaking of contributions, if you've got listeners, this is the film. It's the only group of filmmakers I know that are capturing what's really going on live. They happen to be there. Their website is VoterGate.tv.
Yeah. I've...
And they've got a 30-minute free version of what they're going to be putting together. It's a full-length documentary. And of course, they're sitting there recording this whole thing of, you know, people toting out, you know, boxes.
This is great.
And stuff in it and disappearing out the back door and someone else coming in the front door saying, how'd we find this in your garbage? And it was really comical if it wasn't so serious.
Bev, you found a difference between the numbers that when you asked for a printout and they gave you the numbers that they gave to Glenna Hood, to the state, and said,
right.
Okay, here's how many votes George got versus John or whatever.
Right.
And they gave you this printout dated November 15th. And then in the trash, you found the actual original tapes that were signed by the poll workers, or presumably the original tapes, or some very good forgeries. And they had different numbers on them from the official numbers that got turned in, although these are actually the original official documents. Were those?
And the difference was hundreds of votes in many different races. It was hundreds of votes.
Right, and these are individual precincts.
The ones we found were in minority areas.
Okay, and so there, you found differences, you found variations, hundreds of votes in individual precincts. And you know, a precinct might only have a few hundred people voting, or it may have a few thousand. And I'm just curious. You would expect that if this was just, you know, a typographic error or a clerical error or somebody screwed up or the machine had hiccups or somebody spilled water on the keyboard, that the mistakes that you would find would be random, that sometimes they would add votes to John Kerry, sometimes they'd add votes to George Bush. Was there any pattern to the change in the vote that you found?
And before I answer that, I will say we're nonpartisan. It wouldn't matter what the pattern is. We're going to report it as it is. But what the pattern is very clear. The anomalies favored George W. Bush and the Republicans.
Every single time?
Yes.
Every single time. That's incredible. That's absolutely incredible. So now you're on to, did you say Broward County?
No, I'm not going to announce on the air the county that we're heading toward.
Probably a good plan,
One in our sight.
Yep.
That has, all I can say is this. When I told them that we would either pick up the Freedom of Information request that we had put in on Election Day, or we would do a hand examination of all their ballots, the supervisor of elections, I began to twitch, and she immediately went back to call her lawyer. So I thought that would be a good one for us to go check into more.
So you've got another suspicious county. Remarkable.
There's actually quite a few in Florida, but
yeah.
We're picking off the low-hanging fruit.
There you go. Now, what do you think about the all this attention that has been given, perhaps in error? I mean, you know, Dixie County and Baker County that I pointed to in my article that are, you know, where they massively, overwhelmingly registered as Democrats, and yet they, you know, hugely the vote went for George W. Bush. And people say, well, it's just Dixiecrats. And certainly there's a lot of Dixiecrats down there. These are fairly small counties.
I noticed that some of the ones in that study were up in the Florida Panhandle. Dixie, I'm not so sure about. I think the approach we've taken with it is it's a good red flag to look at the statistics, you know, because it can give you places to start with, and there's so many. But then the records request that we did on election night is a series of specific diagnostics from an auditing standpoint. And what we are doing with that is, first of all, looking at the behavior, whether they're even willing to give it to us. We now know that Diebold has said there's nothing proprietary in there. They're not objecting to them giving it to us. So when you have county officials who are really, really digging in their heels and don't want us to have that, the diagnostics, that behavior in and of itself indicates they need a closer look. And then when we get the diagnostics, there's a number of things that we look for that will, and if we see anomalies there, then we need to go to the next step. So it's kind of boring in a way, but it's a very sensible procedure. You put in specific diagnostics. You check. You especially focus initially on the ones that had red flags in the statistics. Mm-hmm. And then as you look at the hard data, the polling place tapes and the internal audit logs.
And then you show up and go through the garbage.
You know.
Yes. Yeah, this is absolutely marvelous, Babbitt. I noted that Ralph Nader has called for a recount in New Hampshire specifically because a statistical analysis showed huge anomalies in southeastern New Hampshire, and where I actually used to live. I know that area somewhat, and I'm wondering if you're going to be looking at other states. By the way, for our listeners, we're talking to Bev Harris of Black Box.
I'm going to be in New Hampshire next.
You're going,
And yes, and we'll definitely. Now, one of our investigators, Kathleen Wynn, is actually from Cleveland, Ohio. She's dying to do Cuyahoga County, let me tell you. And so she's heading back now. So, yes, we have a number of states that are actually identified on our website, the first ones. It is frustrating to some people who want to see us use this investigation as a way to overturn the election or something. And unfortunately, we have to do this right.
Yeah.
We have to be right. And so it's most important to us to find out what the votes really were and what happened with these machines. And we're not doing it in a way where we try to pick the area that might overturn something. We're doing it in a way where we try to pick the area that has the biggest anomalies and the most provable documents,
and see what happens.
Yeah, the greatest probability of fraud. I mean, it may well be. It was September 12th, 2001, that the New York Times published the front page story that if a recount had been done of the entire state of Florida, Al Gore would have won. But because Gore was only asking for a recount of four counties, if the recount had only been done of those four counties, then Bush would have won. And they chose to focus on the fact that Bush would have won if they had done the recount, you know, based on the way Gore wanted it. And they buried in the 16th paragraph the fact that Gore had actually won. And they did that because it was the day after 9/11, and they were afraid of diminishing the confidence in the president of the United States. I think that might have been a good call, but it may be that the results of this are going to end up. We're going to know the facts if whatever they are, however this shakes out, long after this election is history. It sounds like you're saying.
I think there's a lot of. I think that what we're doing now is different than anything that's been done before, where we're, you know, everyone was looking for a glitch or an accidental thing, and we're actually the only group that said, let's go look and find the fraud, because there's been fraud. We all know it in every election we've ever had.
Sure.
You know, to some degree or other.
Yeah.
What we need to do is find out how it's done specifically with these new machines, and then set up the type of auditing that will mitigate the
I think it's just absolutely it's absolutely great that you're doing this, Bev, on your website. It's, you know, don't be afraid of the F word, fraud.
Right.
And I think it's absolutely marvelous. Bev Harris from blackboxvoting.org. Bev, we're out of time here in this segment. Thanks so much for being with us and sharing with us what's up. We will as time goes on through this week, we will be checking in with you regularly, if that's all right.
That's great.
Okay, at blackboxvoting.org, Bev Harris, thanks so much for being with us, Bev. It's 20 minutes
thanks
past the hour. Tom Hartman on the radio with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. In fact, they're filthy. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. My newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Orrick XL uses triple-wall disposable filter bags. Try my new vacuum free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Orrick, the clean alternative to bagless vacuums.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S., there's a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs and projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on the clerical error.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
The Tom Hartman Program.
No one knows what it's like to feel these feelings.
Maybe we all do, actually. It's, speaking of feelings, Michael Ventura, a writer, as far as I can tell, a Texas writer, he's fairly well published, good guy. Wrote a fascinating piece, and it wraps up with three paragraphs that are just so concise, so cogent. It's called Letters at 3 a.m., Dancing in the Dark, is the title of his piece, that I just had to share them with you. Every now and then you run across something that's just, you know, somebody says something even better than you can say it, and you just wait, you say, this is incredible. And so I normally don't read things on the air, but this is just great. This is by Michael Ventura. He says, my friend Deborah said today, Bush manipulated through fear, and the people who voted for him are filled with fear. We're buying into it somehow. He generated it, we voted against it, and now we're creating it. That's something that leaves us vulnerable. We're not any different from the other people. End a quote from friend Deborah. Then he says, she's right. Bush's re-election has driven many into a despairing fear, which is just where he wants you to be. That fear you feel inside, that's Bush himself inside you. Act out of fear and the fear will increase. Courage doesn't mean not being afraid. Courage means doing what's necessary in spite of your fear, even because of it. Remember, we've only been organizing on a mass scale for about a year, and we almost won. If more of the poor, the endangered, and the young had voted, we would have won. We must keep those we organized and reach out to those we failed to organize. The poor and the endangered don't have many computers. They're not on the net. Politics is still local. Organizing from the ground up means from the ground up. Face to face, speaking words that people can understand, showing them how they can have a chance to change things and helping them take that chance. It's only a chance, but it's not a delusion. Election day is not set in stone. Our world is in a ferocious flux. In that flux, and the very thing that frightens us most is our chance. And just one more thing. Nothing is less appealing or more boring than solemnity. The old-time lefties who gave us Social Security, the Civil Rights Movement, the 35-hour week, and the original now shredded social safety net, they partied, sang, danced, fetted all the damn time. They were famous for it. These are dark days, and they're going to get darker. But the dark side of the day has always been my favorite time for dancing. Great there, piece by Michael Ventura. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service is on the line with a report for the day from Washington, D.C. Hey, Victoria, how are you doing today?
Hey, very well, thank you.
What's up?
Well, we wait to see who's going to resign next and who's going to be appointed next within the Bush administration. It does seem that the appointments are all coming pretty much from White House staffers. People who are very close to the president.
Yeah.
It seems that in his second administration, this is what he wants, people who he knows, he trusts, he knows what their views are, and no surprises.
Well, this is the same thing Stalin did. It's the same thing Hitler did. It's a fairly common practice among insecure people who have a tendency toward wanting to be dictators. I mean, not necessarily that they are dictators, but just thinking that it would be a good thing. So, surprise?
Not really, no. Not a huge surprise, I don't think. I think one of the big questions is, at this point, who is left, who else is going? Is Rumsfeld going to stick around? Probably for a while, it seems. What about the other major ones? We've got Ridge, what's he going to do?
Yeah.
Don't know.
Yeah.
I'd be very surprised if he wants to stay on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's in fact, germane to this, by the way, here's our quote for the day.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
Is that...
Oh, he's a laugh a minute, isn't he?
Yeah, isn't he? So Ridge and no word on Rumsfeld.
No, not a word at all. Yeah. And really no... No informed speculation. I mean, he was asked earlier in the week, and he said that he hadn't discussed it with the president, and he wasn't going to discuss it with anybody else before he discussed it with him.
Yeah.
So, and that's really it. No, anything that may have been discussed subsequent, it's being kept completely quiet. We have absolutely no idea whether he wants to stay on. I would think he would be tired, but I would think that he may want to see this through, whatever this is.
Yeah, I have a feeling Rummy's going to stick around, and I have a feeling that within a year or two, our Vice President, Dick Cheney, is going to resign, and whoever the Republicans want to set up for 2008 is going to be inserted into that slot, but that's just my guess. Victoria, we got a boogie. We got a break here. Thanks for the call. Thanks for
the
update. Great to hear from you. As always, Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, 29 minutes past the hour.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
German-owned T-Mobile has been accused of discriminating against union workers in the United States. When the FCC required Singular to sell a portion of its California network to T-Mobile, 100 unionized workers were fired. In order to get their jobs back, these workers must apply through a hiring agency, which makes them ineligible for union membership and employment benefits. No legal charges have yet been filed. International protests against the treatment have been voiced by Union Network International, an organization that represents more than 15 million workers worldwide. Stateside, the Communication Workers of America have filed a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board.
Crude oil prices fell to a two-month low on Tuesday in part due to the Nigerian Oil Workers Union halting a planned general strike. The Nigerian government made an 11th-hour concession to increase domestic fuel subsidies by 7%. Niyi Shomade is a Nigerian environmentalist. He says impoverished Nigerians can't afford fuel because of IMF and World Bank policies. 70% of Nigerians live on less than a dollar a day.
The IMF and the World Bank structural adjustment programs tells us to reduce our so-called subsidies. The problem is when you do the research, you'll find that the cost of petroleum in Nigeria compared to what we're selling it at is actually very low. And we're approximately the fifth largest oil producer in the world, and yet we're paying very high prices for gasoline.
Although deemed illegal by the courts, the Nigeria Labor Congress says it won't hesitate to issue a new strike order if the government doesn't come through with its promise to reduce fuel prices within 1 week.
As Delta, American Airlines, U.S. Airways, and United Airlines threaten to cut jobs or diminish pay, flight attendants aren't taking the decisions lying down. The heads of the Association of Flight Attendants have unanimously voted to authorize a strike, saying that they are upset over how their members are being treated. Union members must now approve the strike before a walkout can occur. The AFA charges that United Airlines and U.S. Airways are taking advantage of their bankruptcy status to cancel union contracts and impose massive pay cuts. United says that an employee strike at this time would mean the end for the airline.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. When it comes to benefits as part of worker pay packages, 75% of union workers in America have health benefits compared with just 49% of non-union workers. 69% of union workers have short-term disability coverage, while only 30% of non-union workers have that.
82% of union workers in America have life insurance, compared with only 51% for non-union workers.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Van Morrison, incredible. Just an incredible musician. Tom, I'm very interested in what you call NLP, I believe, writes Mr. Lynn. Where can I learn more about this? I would like to study. We did our NLP training yesterday. We did in this segment of the program, 17-minute chunk on the various submodalities that people use. Anyhow, Mr. Lynn writes and how to anchor them, and says, I'd like to study books, traditional school settings, home study, and practice it. I only get to hear you sporadically, but I'll listen as much as possible. Maybe you should write a book on this subject if you ever have time for such a project. Okay, couple quick answers to that. Number one, I did write a book on NLP, and my publisher, it was basically a primer or a primer, depending on what part of the country you're from, on NLP, describing the basic stuff about it. And my publisher said, this was 5 years ago, 6 years, 7 years ago. At that time, ADHD was really hot, and my ADD books were selling really well. And the publisher said, you know, you got to put an ADD hook into this thing in order to make it sell. Otherwise, it's just going to be another textbook. And so I went back through and rewrote it as, you know, kind of NLP in the context of ADHD. But it's still, I think, a pretty good introduction to neurolinguistic programming, which is what NLP stands for. And that book is called Healing ADD, and it's still in print. You can find it in bookstores. You can get it online. And, in fact, Richard Bandler, the co-founder of NLP, wrote the foreword for it. Richard is a friend and the fellow who trained me as an NLP trainer. So, anyhow, slowly I am working on a book on NLP and politics and activism. And, in fact, these classes that we're doing on the air that we're going to be doing over the next few months are sort of, you know, tracking that. The other resource that I would refer you to, I'd say there are no good books I know about that are comprehensive about neurolinguistic programming and politics. And, in fact, really nobody other than on the right has gotten into this, and even on the right, they don't call it NLP. They a lot of people do NLP stuff, and they don't call it NLP. They give it other names. And in the therapy field, it's called solution-based therapy, or fast therapy, or rapid therapy, or emotional freedom technique, or whatever. Yeah, these are all variations on things that came out of NLP originally. But on the web, probably the two best resources for NLP are either purenlp.com, which is run by John LaValle, who's the president of the Society for NLP and a friend and a good guy. Purenlp.com is really about NLP in business. They have this system called design persuasion and, you know, all this stuff. It's like that. And then the therapeutic NLP, probably the best site, is nlpanchorpoint.com. Anchor spelled A-N-C-H-O-R, point. An anchor point is a term in NLP that we'll get to in a future class. But www.nlpanchorpoint, all one word, .com. And that gets you to Anchor Point magazine. In fact, if you toss Anchor Point into Google, it's the first thing that comes up. And Anchor Point magazine is the main magazine in the NLP field. And the institute that publishes it also does trainings and certifications and all kinds of stuff. So for those people who want more information. But for folks who are looking for NLP information in the context of politics, about the closest we have right now is this book and videotape by George Lakoff. And I wrote a review of this for BuzzFlash. We do a book every month on BuzzFlash.com. And our book of the month this month, that, you know, it's Tom Hartman's Independent Thinkers Book of the Month is what it's called. And you can find it at buzzflash.com. And this month it's Don't Think of an Elephant, Know Your Values and Frame the Debate is the book. And then the videotape, How Democrats and Progressives Can Win by George Lakoff. And like one of the two co-founders of NLP, John Grinder, George Lakoff is also a linguistician. I don't know what the. Anyhow, he's a professor of linguistics. And he has written a great book about one dimension of NLP, which we will be getting into in future discussions, which is called framing. And I just, you know, the points that I made in the review are worthy of touching on. Back in 1988 was when I first saw this happening. I mean, I first got into and studied NLP back in the late 70s when I was the executive director of a residential treatment facility for abused kids. And it was, yeah, I learned it in the context of, you know, a therapeutic tool. The psychologist that we had hired to work with our kids was an NLP practitioner, and he taught us an awful lot of stuff. And I just, you know, was fascinated by it. And a decade later, 1988, in that presidential campaign, I remember noticing that there was a series of ads that showed Willie Horton in black and white, and, you know, they just kept anchoring that. Willie Horton, black and white. Willie Horton, black and white. And this is what's called submodality anchoring. And there was a particular type of music behind it. And after a while, you'd see that, you just kind of see that black and white in that music and that voice, that particular voice, and you just think, oh, my God, it's him. He's going to come and get me, right? I mean, because that was how it was presented. This guy was a murderer and a rapist, and he really was. And he had been let out of prison in Massachusetts, and he'd gone out and killed somebody else, raped and murdered somebody else. And, you know, it was a mistake in the system. These things happen. Although Dukakis, as the governor, had signed off on it, as you do on all pardons or releases or whatever. So the Bush campaign was holding him personally responsible for it. But anyhow, then I noticed a month or so later, another set of commercials in which they had Dukakis's face in black and white with similar music behind it and the same voice. And I thought, they're anchoring at an emotional level Dukakis to Willie Horton, so that whenever people see Dukakis's face, they'll feel Willie Horton. And I thought, you know, my first thought was, that's pretty brilliant. You know, this stuff is not a secret, by the way, in ad agencies. This is, I probably, you know, with some embarrassment should confess this. I used to teach this to ad agencies. Made a living doing that for a while. It's no secret. In fact, there's a whole industry around it. But it had never, in my experience, been brought into the political arena. It was just considered too hot, you know, just over the top. And in the 1988 Bush campaign, George Herbert Walker Bush, they did this. They Willie Hortonized Michael Dukakis. And I was, Louise and I were in New York attending an NLP conference, actually, put on by a guy, Joe Riggio, who's just a brilliant NLP trainer. And there was another person there who ran one of the major NLP websites, and I mentioned to him the Willie Horton ads, and he said, yeah, so-and-so, and I'm not going to out this person, I'm not going to name him, but a mutual acquaintance of ours has gone to work for the Republicans. And, you know, I got it, that it was no accident. And of course, you know, Frank Luntz is also the big guy in this. Not that he's out of the NLP world, but what he's using is NLP stuff. And at the time, I was living in Atlanta, in the northern suburbs of Atlanta. We lived in Roswell, and which was a district represented by Newt Gingrich. He was my congressman. And I could tell you some wild stories about that. Someday we will. But about that time, or just, you know, shortly thereafter, actually, I think it was must have been like 92. Well, I'm not sure what year it was. Anyhow, Newt came out with his, when he came out with his Contract on America, which was masterfully framed stuff in NLP terms. He also came out with his word list. And it was in a secret memo that went out to GOP leaders. And frankly, I'm not sure that Newt wrote this. He was a good, although he still follows these rules, it's possible he wrote it. but I'm guessing it was my old NLP friend or somebody like him. I'm quoting, the memo was titled, Language, a Key Mechanism of Control, by Newt Gingrich. Newt wrote, often we search hard for words to help us define our opponents. Apply these words to the opponent, their record, proposal, and their party. And here's the list of words that Newt said you should always use whenever you're going to describe anything democratic or liberal. Always attach these words to the word liberal. And, of course, this, you know, all the right-wing talk show hosts got this, too. Decay, failure, fail, collapsing, deeper, crisis, urgent, destructive, destroy, sick, pathetic, lie, liberal, they, them, unionized bureaucracy, compassion is not enough, betray, consequences, limit, shallow, traitors, sensationalists, endanger, coercion, hypocrisy, radical, threaten, devour, waste, corruption, incompetent, permissive, destruction, impose, self-serving, greed, ideological, insecure, anti-flag, anti-family, anti-child, anti-jobs, pessimistic, excuses, intolerant, stagnation, welfare, corrupt, selfish, insensitive, status quo, mandates, taxes, spending, shame, disgrace, punish, bizarre, cynicism, cheat, steal, abusive power, machine bosses, obsolete, criminal rights, red tape, and patronage. And as I went through that list, you probably recognized a lot of words that you've heard in the context of discussions about Democrats and liberals, and it's no accident. What was amazing to me during this last election was the number of cons who would come on shows like Crossfire and talking about John Kerry would just pull these words out of the hat. On the other hand, Newt said to the Republicans that there are positive governing words. Positive words that should be attached to any discussion of the GOP or GOP policies, conservative policies. Any reference. He said, memorize as many as possible of these words. That's a direct quote of these positive governing words. And here's the words that Newt said should be attached to all things Republican and have been basically ever since this memo came out, more than a decade ago, certainly by right-wing radio talk show hosts. Share, change, opportunity, legacy, challenge, control, truth, moral, courage, reform, prosperity, crusade, movement, children, family, debate, compete, actively, we, us, our, this instead of they or them, candidly, humane, pristine, provide, liberty, commitment, principled, unique, duty, precious, premise, caring, tough, listen, learn, help, lead, vision, success, empowerment, citizen, activist, mobilize, conflict, light, dream, freedom, peace, rights, pioneer, proud, pride, building, preserve, pro-flag, pro-children, pro-environment, reform, workfare, eliminate good time in prison, strength, choose, choice, fair, protect, confident, incentive, hard work, initiative, common sense, and passionate. Newt Gingrich's official word list. And this was very, very powerful stuff. What I'm sharing with you is that we have been on the receiving end of two decades of psychological warfare that's only been played by one side. And how the Democrats didn't figure out that this was going on, or if they did figure it out, how they failed to do anything about it is just beyond me, frankly. It baffles me. So into this fray steps George Lakoff. And George Lakoff has come up with this book, and this is the BuzzFlash Book of the Month, the Tom Hartman's Thinking Independent Thinker Book Club Book of the Month on BuzzFlash.com, and which is how they support their website, by the way. There's a lot of great progressive sites, by the way, out there. And, you know, Common Dreams, of course, is the one that I always write for first and post my things on. BuzzFlash is a great one. They pick up a lot of my stuff, and I do these book reviews for them. Op-Ed News, another one. Truthout.org. If I try and do a list, I'm sure I'll leave somebody out. But there's some great websites out there. Anyhow, George Lakoff has written this book, and in this book, he talks about framing and talks about, for example, tax relief. You know, it used to be that, you know, for 200 years in America, we all understood that taxes are, to quote Franklin Roosevelt, or to paraphrase Franklin Roosevelt, taxes are the cost of admission to a civil society. Right? There's this infrastructure that we have that we all use. Our police departments, our fire departments, our roads, our you know, the trucks that clear in the snow here in the People's Republic of Vermont, or clean up after the hurricanes down in Florida, or whatever. You know, there is this stuff that we all use collectively. It's called the commons, our government itself. Our bridges, our highways, our tunnels, our air traffic control system. All of these things are, you know, should be, in my opinion, our rail system. Unfortunately, it got mostly privatized, although it's been subsidized to some extent. But, I really think that we should have a rail system. But that's a whole other argument, you know, like Europe does. And National Public Radio also used to be considered part of the commons. Now it's about half privatized, unfortunately. But we have this notion that the way that we all pay for this stuff is with taxes, and that if somebody doesn't want to pay their fair share, they're a freeloader. And that any politician who would suggest that people shouldn't have to pay their fair share, or that we should borrow from our grandchildren so that people don't have to pay their fair share, would be an enabler of freeloaders and a corrupt politician. I mean, we all understood this in America for over 200 years. And we called tax cuts and tax breaks. We called tax breaks. And they're like, you know, not real desire, you know, not good things necessarily. Because, you know, freeloaders were using them. Well, then along came Grover Norquist and his merry band of millionaire conservatives. And they said, let's change the word. And Frank Luntz actually was responsible for this. Change the word to tax relief. Relief implies a burden. And you're relieving somebody of a burden. So, literally overnight, really in a period of about 10 or 12 years, the whole concept of taxation was changed in America. And now we see, much to our detriment, it's stripping, it's ripping apart our government, it's tearing down the dollar, and tearing apart our civil society. But that's what they've been doing. 10 minutes before the hour.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard. You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. In the presidential elections, nearly 90% of African Americans cast their vote for Senator John Kerry. But with President Bush back in the White House, African Americans are looking to the local level to push for change. WIN reporter Leanne Caldwell has more.
Both presidential campaigns focused on the war in Iraq, terrorism, and keeping America safe. Many in the black community adamantly oppose the occupation of Iraq. They say it's a war based on lies and profiteering. African-American opposition to the war is also strong because it disproportionately affects minorities, as most enlistees are low-income people of color.
A Republican Party who diametrically opposes everything New York families are all about.
New York City Councilmember Charles Barron, whose motto is that all politics are local, stresses that unemployment is rising, the Section 8 housing program is shrinking, and school funding continues to go unfulfilled. 50% of black males are unemployed in New York City. Councilmember Barron says that the policy of shrinking government shrinks employment, as 60% of black and Latino work in the public sector.
You got to listen to these code words, that we're going to shrink government. We're going to make sure that we privatize more of the public sector, even things like the faith-based initiatives that is taken away from social institutions that the government provided and given it to these private religious groups.
A major program that President Bush will push in his next 4 years is the privatization of Social Security. This would have a doubly negative impact on the black communities who aren't large contributors to the stock market. And with unemployment rates so high, many don't have money to set aside for 30 years down the road. Leaders in the black community say they'll continue voter registration drives and push to get more people of color elected to public office in the next 4 years. For WIN, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, changing the weather, changing the sea.
Come and rain, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Francis in Eureka, California on the line. Hey, Francis, I see on my screen that you had called before, and somehow I just spaced that. I hope you didn't sit on hold too long.
No, I didn't. They advised me to call back.
Oh, okay, good.
Thank you.
I must have gone off on some tangent or something.
Because I missed something that right before the last break, the last hour, Phyllis said something about Czechoslovakia and maybe preempting World War II.
Say what?
I didn't know how to put it briefly. I really need to learn that framing thing.
Yeah.
We were talking about World War II, and we're not wanting to go into the war at first.
I played that clip from Father Coughlin about war.
And the caller said something about, and then I missed a couple of words. Happened over here.
Yeah, what he was pointing out was that Father Coughlin was a notorious anti-Semite, and that the Republican Party, as a bloc virtually, and a lot of Americans didn't want to go into World War II in the 30s, in the late 30s, 37, 38, 39, 1940, strong isolationist sentiments, and that Father Coughlin was talking about this international banking conspiracy and all this kind of stuff.
Got that.
And I acknowledge that, and I said that not defending Father Coughlin's anti-Semitism, which actually ultimately brought him down. It's why the church took him off the air.
Well, I understood that earlier. Well, yeah. He said something about Czechoslovakia, and said it in just a couple of words.
Oh, well, I missed that, because the point that I made was that I thought that, back in that time, that Father Coughlin and a lot of the folks who were opposed to the war were opposed to World War II because they thought it was a repeat of World War I, which was sort of a war without a reason.
And then we realized it was a reason. It was quite late. Now,
that's
was
right.
There something... Was it felt there was something that could have been done preemptively that would have been so much less than warlike? than a war.
Well,
what
we could have done is we could have stopped Hitler as soon as he invaded Austria. I mean, that's why there is this international law now that George Bush violated, which says that it is a war crime to invade a country that is not, you know, that has not provoked you, that is not right on the edge of confronting you or has not already attacked you, and without a resolution from the United Nations. And we did not have the approval of the Security Council to attack Iraq.
Really
we only had the approval to send inspectors in. They never held that vote. And so we committed a war crime. And that came out of World War II. So that, you know, we were saying we don't want this, what Hitler did, to happen again.
Exactly.
So, you know, so we're going to say if anybody does what Hitler did and starts invading countries, then, you know, that's a war crime and we're going to stop them. And so now who's doing it? It's the United States. And that has put everybody in a bit of a bind. Francis, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. The bind is, of course, you know, which is the tail and which is the dog with us in the UN and all this other stuff. And will George W. Bush get arrested when he goes to Canada, as the Toronto Star essentially called for yesterday, as a war criminal? Strange times we live in, my friends. Very strange times. But we'll get through. We'll get through, and it'll be even better.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
German-owned T-Mobile has been accused of discriminating against union workers in the United States. When the FCC required Singular to sell a portion of its California network to T-Mobile, 100 unionized workers were fired. In order to get their jobs back, these workers must apply through a hiring agency, which makes them ineligible for union membership and employment benefits. No legal charges have yet been filed. International protests against the treatment have been voiced by Union Network International, an organization that represents more than 15 million workers worldwide. Stateside, the Communication Workers of America have filed a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board.
Crude oil prices fell to a two-month low on Tuesday, in part due to the Nigerian Oil Workers Union halting a planned general strike. The Nigerian government made an 11th-hour concession to increase domestic fuel subsidies by 7%. Niyi Shomade is a Nigerian environmentalist. He says impoverished Nigerians can't afford fuel because of IMF and World Bank policies. 70% of Nigerians live on less than a dollar a day.
The IMF and the World Bank structural adjustment programs tells us to reduce our so-called subsidies. The problem is when you do the research, you'll find that the cost of petroleum in Nigeria compared to what we're selling it at is actually very low. And we're approximately the fifth largest oil producer in the world, and yet we're paying very high prices for gasoline.
Although deemed illegal by the courts, the Nigeria Labor Congress says it won't hesitate to issue a new strike order if the government doesn't come through with its promise to reduce fuel prices within 1 week.
As Delta, American Airlines, U.S. Airways, and United Airlines threaten to cut jobs or diminish pay, flight attendants aren't taking the decisions lying down. The heads of the Association of Flight Attendants have unanimously voted to authorize a strike, saying that they are upset over how their members are being treated. Union members must now approve the strike before a walkout can occur. The AFA charges that United Airlines and U.S. Airways are taking advantage of their bankruptcy status to cancel union contracts and impose massive pay cuts. United says that an employee strike at this time would mean the end for the airline.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. When it comes to benefits as part of worker pay packages, 75% of union workers in America have health benefits compared with just 49% of non-union workers. 69% of union workers have short-term disability coverage, while only 30% of non-union workers have that. 82% of union workers in America have life insurance, compared with only 51% for non-union workers.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
The dumbest thing that a political party can do is to abandon its reason for existence and try to become a pale imitation of the other party. Yet this is exactly what some of the so-called political pros are prescribing for Democrats. The latest conventional wisdom from these insiders is that Bush's election is a triumph of moral values over such big issues as war and the economy. George W., they say, bluntly professes that he's guided by God, thus causing evangelical Christians to vote for him, even against their economic self-interest. Therefore, they assert, Democrats can't win until they get like George and start appealing to Christian fundamentalists. Nonsense. Certainly, the working people and poor folks who are in those churches must be appealed to by Democrats, but not like George, not on the narrow basis used by Republicans, God, guns, and gays. Rather, Democratic candidates must openly profess, by word and deed, the deeply held fundamental moral values that the party was created to represent: fairness, justice, and opportunity for all. This is high moral ground, which the Bushites routinely desecrate with virtually all of their policies and actions. Yet it's ground that Democrats senselessly have abandoned. It's not that evangelical working-class Christians voted against their own economic self-interest on November 2nd, but that the Kerry campaign had failed to appeal to it with any clarity or credibility. The candidate himself was aloof, elitist, and surrounded by upscale professionals, and the campaign gave little sense that a Kerry administration would be an FDR-JFK-LBJ champion of America's underdogs. This is Jim Hightower saying, yes, Democrats must talk more directly about values, the core Democratic values that make the party important. These are not only the values that founded America, but in church terms, they're the values preached and practiced by Jesus.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me.
Guacamole.
You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get ScorePower from Equifax.com. ScorePower gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get ScorePower at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. Score power at Equifax.com.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back, friends. Our quote for the day here from Robert F. Kennedy, a thought worth considering. Few will have the greatness to bend history itself, But each of us can work to change a small portion of events, and in the total of all those acts will be written the history of this generation. Welcome back to the program. Just to recap for those of you who are just tuning in, we just had on Bev Harris in the last hour of the program. Bev, the erstwhile leader of blackboxvoting.com and author of the book Black Box Voting. And Bev had, on election night, filed Freedom of Information Act filings for every precinct in America, asking for the machine tapes, the actual paper trail of the voting machines. And she showed up yesterday in Volusia County, Florida, and said, okay, where are they? And they handed her some printouts that were dated November 15th. That showed, you know, the total vote counts in each one of the precincts in that county. There's some 120 precincts, more or less. And she said, no, I want the original. Each precinct should submit one, what's called a vote tape or machine tape, you know, basically a printout that is signed by the poll workers who were there that night. And she said, I want to see the originals that are signed. And they said, oh, well, those are down in the warehouse, a different building, and it's closing hours now, so we'll meet you there tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. And she said, okay, fine. And so she showed up there this morning, at 8 o'clock instead of early, right? And they're already there. And she goes in, and they're inside, and they've got a bunch of ballot forms. They've got a bunch of these tape things on a table, and they're all, like, bent over them, you know, with pens in their hands. And she's like, so what's going on? And they grab her, and they hustle her out, and they lock the door. So she notices that there's a trash bag over by the trash bin, this, you know, bucket of stuff that is to be sent off to be shredded. And so I won't call her Snoopy. Let's say curious person that she is. Bev went over and opened the trash bag, and guess what was in there? The original tapes, the original machine outputs with the signatures of the people from the various counties, the various precincts, listing the number of votes that actually were recorded by the machines. So she sat down and she started comparing these ones that she had pulled out of the trash with the printout that had been handed to her the afternoon before, which, of course, was a copy of what was certified by Glenna Hood. Is that her name, as I recall? The Secretary of State of the state of Florida, when she certified the election yesterday. And lo and behold, the numbers were different. And not only were the numbers different, but in every single case, the mistake between the original numbers that were signed for and certified by the poll workers and the numbers that the county submitted to the state were in favor, the mistakes were all in favor of George W. Bush. Fascinating. So they freaked out. They called the police. The county sheriff showed up. She's got a film crew with her. She's filming all this stuff. This is going to make a great movie. But she had the law on her side. I mean, she requests a subpoena for the garbage can. Right? Says, "Oh, we want that garbage can." Then they go down to another part of the election headquarters and they look in that garbage can, and there's more of these things that have been tossed into the garbage. Apparently, they did this purge as soon as they found out that she was in town, which was yesterday, and the trash people hadn't picked up the trash yet, and so she's got the evidence. She's got them red-handed. Vote fraud in Florida. It sure looks like it. We're waiting for some, you know, secondary verification. In the meantime, our conservative alert for the day, and it's really a big one here. It goes beyond just the little theme music and the rants. Media Matters for America has done a great job. MediaMatters.org is their website of documenting this. Keith Olbermann is the only reporter. He does a show called Countdown with Keith Olbermann on MSNBC weeknights at, I think it's at 9 o'clock, maybe it's at 8 o'clock, I forget. But it's every weeknight, Eastern time. And he is the only mainstream reporter who has been reporting on the fact that there are, I mean, literally hundreds of thousands of voting irregularities that have been reported to these groups that set up around the country to look for them. I mean, well over 100,000. And Common Cause alone has recorded over 30,000. And they're just one of many groups. I mean, you know. So Keith Olbermann has been documenting these things. So, of course, the right-wing disinformation machine has spun into high gear. In her November 11th nationally syndicated column, right-wing pundit Ann Coulter falsely asserted that Olbermann has been, quote, peddling the theory that Bush stole the election, end of quote. Olbermann never said anything even remotely close to that. And referred to, quote, Olbermann's idiotic conspiracy theory, end quote. Again, he's not putting forth any conspiracy theory. He's simply reporting on actual, shall we say, oddities. You know, machines that report 4,000 votes for George W. Bush in a precinct where there's only 600 registered voters, stuff like that. I think the conservatives are upset about this because it seems like all of these, or certainly the vast majority of these stories, are, you know, where the vote ended up, there was an anomaly of some sort, and George ended up getting more votes than he should have, or than he actually did. More votes ended up getting recorded. So, November 14th column by Associate Editor Bill Steigerwald of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. This is a newspaper owned by the notorious right-wing financier Richard Mellon Scaife, one of the founders of the Heritage Foundation, claimed that Olbermann, quote, really made a Dan Rather of himself, end quote, by talking about election fraud. Washington Times columnist Greg Pierce in his November 10th Inside Politics column, talking about Olbermann, says, quote, with Did Your Vote Count the Plot Thickens on his as his on-screen header, MSNBC's Keith Olbermann on Monday night led his countdown program with more than 15 straight minutes of paranoid and meaningless claims of voting irregularities in states won by President Bush. Yeah, so these guys are going after him. And strangely, he's on vacation this week. But adding to the general madness, Media Matters just, you know, noting what's going on the Reich here. Bill O'Reilly, Mr. Loofah Sponge, right? Mr. Hey, Falafel. I'm not going to read the lawsuit stuff. But Bill O'Reilly falsely claimed on his radio program recently that everybody down in Guantanamo are al-Qaeda people and therefore are out of the range of the Geneva Convention. Somebody called in and says, something about, O'Reilly, you think that Zarqawi and Osama bin Laden are entitled to Geneva Convention protections? Caller, no, I don't. O'Reilly, all right, so what are you disagreeing with me for? That's the crux of the matter. Caller, well, I'm disagreeing with you because the overwhelming number of people aren't bin Laden or Zarqawi. He's talking about in Guantanamo. O'Reilly says, they're all bin Laden guys! And then O'Reilly says, wait, let me finish. And then the caller says, let me finish. O'Reilly says, no, hold on, no, I'm not letting you finish a fallacious analysis. All the Guantanamo guys are al-Qaeda, all of them. What do you think they're doing down there? Well, it turns out they're not all al-Qaeda. O'Reilly goes on to say, you say that the Guantanamo people, the 500 people being held in Guantanamo aren't al-Qaeda. That's wrong. Well, on May 7, 2003, Ari Fleischer announced, quote, President Bush today has decided that the Geneva Convention will apply to the Taliban detainees, but not to the al-Qaeda international terrorists. Fleischer proceeded to explain that while the Bush administration does not consider either al-Qaeda or Taliban to be prisoners of war under Article 4 of the Geneva Convention, the convention still governs the detention of Taliban members, presumably as enemy combatants. By contrast, human rights groups, including Human Rights Watch, argue that because they were fighting for the de facto government of Afghanistan, which is a party to the Geneva Convention, Taliban detainees are legally entitled to prisoner of war status under Article 4 of the Third Geneva Convention. But O'Reilly completely overlooks this reality that a lot of these guys down in Guantanamo have nothing to do with al-Qaeda. And the administration says so, has always said so. But It's just amazing. Later in the show, O'Reilly and co-host E.D. Hill ridiculed those who believe that the Geneva Convention applies to detainees from Afghanistan. This is really tragic, frankly. Because when somebody with a national podium, like O'Reilly or Savage or another one of these over-the-top right-wingers, starts going into attack mode of, we should just kill them all, you know, bomb them back to the Stone Age, as like Savage was ranting about last night, or O'Reilly saying, you know, reasonable people don't, normal people, he says, you got to have a symbol or uniform or something. That's how normal people would interpret it. This is what Hill said. O'Reilly says, that's the letter of the law, but they're not interpreting it that way. Hill, if they, the authors of the Geneva Convention, meant that they didn't have to have uniforms of a nation, O'Reilly, they would have said it. You know, this, when you start parsing out the Geneva Convention, the problem with this is that we, our soldiers, are protected by the Geneva Convention, by the Third Geneva Convention. Our soldiers are protected by it. And any nation that violates those rules of war that came out of World War II, so that the atrocities of World War II committed on the battlefield, and not to mention the atrocities that were committed off the battlefield, but specifically the battlefield atrocities of World War II, would not be repeated. We're going to have civilized wars, right, to the extent that we can. That we are protected by those things, too. And if any nation violates those, if they take our prisoners and they don't hold them correctly, they can be held to account by the international community. And they could be attacked by the international community for violating the Geneva Convention. And it protects us. It's not about, you know, being a bleeding heart liberal or something. It's about wanting our soldiers to have some measure of protection if they're in conflict. And how, you know, yeah, I know it's cheap, you know, it's a cheap shot. It makes a, you know, it satisfies the red meat conservatives to kill them all. But, you know, there is something to be said for doing things in a straightforward and rational way that gets the job done and doesn't decivilize us. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Walk that walk, talk that talk, walk that walk.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. It wasn't just Bill O'Reilly who was, shall we say, misinformed on the air, and the normal right wing crew. Here we have the Reverend Jerry Falwell, National Chairman of the Faith and Values Coalition and founder of Moral Majority, lying about, well, who else? Bill and Hillary Clinton, of course. On C-SPAN's Washington Journal a couple of days ago, Falwell says, and I quote, "Hillary is committed, clearly. She has a distaste for," she and her husband at one point said. Right now, here he's saying that Hillary and her husband at one point said, he did, I abhor the military. And Bill Clinton could have been as conservative as Ronald Reagan. I don't think he has an ideology. I think he's an opportunist and a great leader and a great politician, but no real value system. Not so with Hillary. She is clearly an ideologue. She is clearly a socialist. She is clearly to the left, even of John Kerry, and that's bad. And very frankly, I think she'd ruin America. End of quote. Well, it turns out Bill Clinton never said, "I abhor the military." And, you got Jerry Falwell on national television, basically lying. And he's saying that Hillary said it along with Bill. Here's the actual quote. This was on December 3rd, 1969. Bill Clinton is in London. Not in London. He's in England at Oxford University, a Rhodes Scholar studying, he's in college. And he sent a letter to Mr. Holmes, Colonel Eugene Holmes, former commander of the University of Arkansas ROTC unit. He knew this guy. And he said, "I am writing to you in the hope that my telling this one story will help you to understand more clearly how so many fine people have come to find themselves still loving their country but loathing the military, to which you and other good men have devoted years, lifetimes, of the best service you could give." That's the actual quote from Bill Clinton in 1969. He didn't even know Hillary then, number one. She didn't say it. And number two, he's not saying that he loathes the military. He was talking about how the Vietnam War was splitting America. But the truth didn't seem to matter that much to the Reverend Falwell. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Brian in New Jersey on the line. Hey, Brian, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I've been listening to the show all day. I heard the Beth Harris thing, and I'm extremely outraged. At first, I thought I was paranoid. Oh, you know, they stole the elections. But now that she has this hard evidence in her hand, everyone that's listening to your show needs to write a letter to their editor of every newspaper within 100 miles, because you know the media is not going to pick this up, and this is absolutely outrageous. I'm so heated right now.
Yeah.
And that's really
You know, I'm right there with you, Brian. It is pretty amazing. In fact, Louise came in during the break and she said, you know, what? As soon as we get off the air, we're going to clip that piece out, that little audio clip. It's about a 20-minute interview with her. I think it runs 14 minutes. And, you know, put it in an MP3 file, toss it up on the homepage of our website. And then, you know, email the link to everybody we know and all the news media and send it off to Keith Olbermann and whatnot. You know, get it out there as much as we can, because that's Bev telling her story in her own voice, and it's pretty shocking to hear her story.
I'll do the same. I have about 250 people on a mailing list I've been emailing all throughout the election, and I'll do the same exact thing, Tom, because this is more than scary. It's ridiculous.
Well, here's the one thing. Brian, we can't go quite over the edge yet. This is one county, and it's one county in a state that has a long history that goes back, you know, probably well over 100 years of vote fraud. And so this may just be business as usual in Fallujah County, and, you know, we just happen to stumble across it. It doesn't necessarily mean that the vote nationwide was stolen. It doesn't even mean that Florida-wide was stolen. We still need to wait for more evidence. And I think, you know, that's what's great about what Bev's doing, is that she's doing this very methodically, you know, going county to county. But, you know, you're right. There is this smoking gun, at least for this county, and that does need to be publicized. Brian, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I do appreciate it. Are humans going extinct? Extinct? Within 100 years? Stick around. We'll find out.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. In fact, they're filthy. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. My newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Orrick XL uses triple-wall disposable filter bags. Try my new vacuum free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Orrick, the clean alternative to bagless vacuums.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
German-owned T-Mobile has been accused of discriminating against union workers in the United States. When the FCC required Singular to sell a portion of its California network to T-Mobile, 100 unionized workers were fired. In order to get their jobs back, these workers must apply through a hiring agency, which makes them ineligible for union membership and employment benefits. No legal charges have yet been filed. International protests against the treatment have been voiced by Union Network International, an organization that represents more than 15 million workers worldwide. Stateside, the Communication Workers of America have filed a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board.
Crude oil prices fell to a two-month low on Tuesday, in part due to the Nigerian Oil Workers Union halting a planned general strike. The Nigerian government made an 11th-hour concession to increase domestic fuel subsidies by 7%. Niyi Shomade is a Nigerian environmentalist. He says impoverished Nigerians can't afford fuel because of IMF and World Bank policies. 70% of Nigerians live on less than a dollar a day.
The IMF and the World Bank structural adjustment programs tells us to reduce our so-called subsidies. The problem is, when you do the research, you'll find that the cost of petroleum in Nigeria compared to what we're selling it at is actually very low. And we're approximately the fifth largest oil producer in the world, and yet we're paying very high prices for gasoline.
Although deemed illegal by the courts, the Nigeria Labor Congress says it won't hesitate to issue a new strike order if the government doesn't come through with its promise to reduce fuel prices within 1 week.
As Delta, American Airlines, U.S. Airways, and United Airlines threaten to cut jobs or diminish pay, flight attendants aren't taking the decisions lying down. the heads of the Association of Flight Attendants have unanimously voted to authorize a strike, saying that they are upset over how their members are being treated. Union members must now approve the strike before a walkout can occur. The AFA charges that United Airlines and U.S. Airways are taking advantage of their bankruptcy status to cancel union contracts and impose massive pay cuts. United says that an employee strike at this time would mean the end for the airline.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. When it comes to benefits as part of worker pay packages, 75% of union workers in America have health benefits compared with just 49% of non-union workers. 69% of union workers have short-term disability coverage, while only 30% of non-union workers have that. 82% of union workers in America have life insurance compared with only 51% for non-union workers.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. TomHartman.com, our website. If you want to drop into the live chat room, click live chat. It'll take you to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe, kind enough to host our daily chats. And our number, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to call in. Professor Peter Barrett. He's a researcher in New Zealand. He's receiving a prestigious medal. It's called the Marsden Medal tonight. He's the director of the Victoria University Arctic Research Center. And basically what this guy has devoted his life to studying the climate of the Arctic and the Antarctic, specifically of the Antarctic, the southern pole, because he's down in New Zealand. And, using that information from what he finds out down there, as something that can be used to determine whether or not the climate is changing, how it's changing, how rapidly it's changing, what it's going to mean for all of us. And he says, and I quote, this is from his acceptance speech tonight in New Zealand, maybe this morning. Anyhow, he says, after 40 years, I'm part of a huge community of scientists who have become alarmed with our discovery that we know from our knowledge of the ancient past that if we continue our present growth path, we are facing extinction. Not in millions of years, not even in millennia, that's thousands of years, but by the end of this century. Say what? He's predicting the impact of climate change. The result of his research on Antarctic ice sheets, quote, which to our surprise is becoming increasingly relevant to the world as a consequence of global warming, end quote, is that we've got 90 years to go, more or less. Barrett's warning underlines comments he made last year, writes John Hensel in the Fairfax New Zealand Limited, underlines comments he made last year that even the Kyoto Protocol on global warming would not be enough to avoid a climate disaster. The United States and Australia have refused to adopt Kyoto Protocol measures. He says, Dr. Peter Barrett, he says, research on the past Antarctic climate has an ominous warning for the future. We need an international commitment to an effective solution if we are to survive the worst consequences of this grandest of all human experiments. Okay, so here we've got one of the world's leading researchers on the Antarctic saying, whoa, something's going on here and it doesn't look good. Fast forward from that to, or transport yourself from that to, I mean, this was today's news. Also in today's news, the New York Times, yesterday's New York Times, actually, article by Andrew C. Revkin. The election's over. John McCain now feels free to speak out, wasting no time distancing himself from President Bush on an issue that has long divided them, notes the New York Times. Senator John McCain yesterday called the White House stance on climate change, quote, terribly disappointing, end quote, and said inaction in the face of mounting scientific data was unjustified. Now, this is, you know, it's just only been 2 weeks since the campaign ended. And McCain is out there now saying the truth that he wasn't allowed to say or was afraid to say during the campaign. You know, in a way, you kind of have to admire him for speaking the truth now, but where was he 3 weeks ago? Mr. Bush, notes Revkin in this New York Times article, has opposed restrictions on carbon dioxide and other heat-trapping gases, these greenhouse gases, since early 2001, when he abandoned a pledge he made in his first presidential campaign to restrict carbon dioxide from power plants. Yes, George Bush had pledged to restrict carbon dioxide, slow down global warming. Once he became president, however, he did the same thing he did in Texas, which basically was hand the regulatory agencies over to the regulated. Let the power industry, let the polluting industries, let the chemical industry come in and write the rules under which they have to live. Put, you know, the former Cattlemen's Association director Van Veneman in as Secretary of Agriculture, for example. You know, it's just the Bush way. You know, let the foxes run the hen house. After all, they're private foxes who donate heavily to the Republican causes, and the hen house is just the rest of us. It's just we the people. Well, McCain is actually quite concerned about this. He and Joe Lieberman have authored a bill that would create some relatively modest, to quote the New York Times, curbs on greenhouse gas emissions. He said, this is a very time-sensitive issue, McCain said. Diane Perino, a White House spokeswoman, said that Mr. Bush saw climate change as a serious issue, but that he favored using voluntary means to slow the growth of greenhouse gas emissions. Yeah, that's the answer. That's definitely the industry will always do the right thing voluntarily, even if it makes them a little less profitable. You can depend on them. Haven't these people noticed what happened with, for example, Vioxx? The focus of today's hearings, the last of Mr. McCain's six-year tenure as chairman of the Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee, will be rapid warming in the Arctic. It'll be interesting to see if tomorrow, when we get our call from in the second hour of the program from the Talk Radio News Service, Ellen Ratner or Victoria Jones, if they had attended today's hearings. This would be a hearing that would be fascinating. Wrapping up this article in the New York Times, Mr. McCain said yesterday that the evidence, which he called alarming, was clearer than ever. With several other senators, he visited the Arctic fringe in Norway and Iceland in late summer. It was remarkable, John McCain said. Going up on a small ship next to this glacier and seeing where it had been just 10 short years ago and how quickly it's receded. Particularly disturbing, he said, is the rapid pace of warming. And then here's this quote from John McCain, right? Who you wouldn't think of as an arch environmentalist, right? He's getting it. This isn't just about, gee, is spring going to come a week earlier here in Vermont? And it is already, by the way. This is about potentially the survival of the human race. John McCain says, quote, the Inuit language, this is, we used to call them Eskimos, appropriate name is the Inuit. The Inuit language for 10,000 years never had a word for robin. You know that little bird with the red breast, a robin red breast? The Inuit language for 10,000 years never had a word for robin, he said, and now there are robins all over their villages. And what this highlights, really, is this bizarre, and by the way, I predict... Well, let me finish one thought before I go to the next. What this highlights is this bizarre situation of us having all this information, knowing that we could supply 100% of the energy needs of the United States right now with solar and wind, and we would need to produce no more carbon dioxide at all. In fact, there would be such a surplus of solar and wind power, given the current technology that's available, that we could use that surplus electricity to split water into hydrogen and oxygen and compress that hydrogen and start running our cars on hydrogen where the exhaust is just water vapor. I mean, this is not pie-in-the-sky stuff. This is here now, this technology. And yet, at the same time, you're not hearing about this in the mainstream media. You know, there's no action being taken by our government about this. And one of the things that concerns me the most about it is that you have these advertisements on CNN. And you know, I'm not gonna just like accuse somebody of something. I don't want to just, you know, get into that, but you know, you've got these ads on the air on CNN for clean energy with coal, right? Coal produces probably more CO2 than any of the other fuel sources, right? Just enormous amounts of CO2. Although they all do. I mean, it's hydrocarbons. You split up hydrocarbons. You release the carbon inside them. It combines with oxygen, and burning process produces carbon dioxide, right? So here's the coal industry shoveling millions of dollars, or lots of money, let's say. I don't know how many dollars it is. To CNN or to my local cable company, one or the other. I don't know which it is, but I'm assuming it's to CNN. I'm assuming it's on their what are called network minutes. And I'm guessing that you're not going to see or hear, as the case may be, CNN reporting on the carbon dioxide crisis quite so aggressively as they might otherwise. And this is, you know, this concerns me. You've got these oil companies advertising heavily on the news networks, on the news shows. We make oil spars and drilling rig equipment. My brother-in-law used to be a sea captain, supplied these things, but I can't pronounce it. Anyway, and you know, I'm not going to buy a drilling rig. Are you? I don't think so. Why are these guys advertising on TV? I'm not going to buy a trainload of coal. Why are they advertising on TV? Could it be that they just want an excuse to give dollars to the news industry so that the news industry won't pick on them? I sure hope not. The other thing that going to solar and wind would do is it would allow us to decentralize our power systems. Right now, about 17% of all electricity in the United States is wasted simply by being converted to heat in long high-tension lines. And if we started generating our own electricity in local communities, well, the problem, of course, is that it would put some of the big energy, the huge energy corporations that contribute so much money to the Bush administration, put them out of business, unless they got into the decentralization business somehow. But, you know, it wouldn't give them the power over us that they have right now. But it also would allow us to save 17% of our energy. I mean, we could do this now, too. It's amazing. Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Roy, how's life today? How you doing? What's on your mind?
Well, it's pretty fine, going to get better, and lots on my mind.
Okay.
But the reason I was calling, yesterday I heard a clip, and you mentioned it this morning, but out with the October numbers or whatnot, 1.7. And then they slid it through and said, but that if you exclude energy and food, it's not too bad.
Hang on, just somehow something that you said there dropped out. And the October what numbers? What are we? Oh, you're talking about the inflation numbers?
Cost of living or price index?
Oh, the numbers are showing that right now we're experiencing inflation at a 22% annual rate or something like that.
Now the thing is that when they did that, then they slid in and said, but if you factor out the fuel or energy and food costs,
right,
it's not too bad.
Right.
Well,
for those people who don't need to eat,
spend an extra $10 or $15 a week in fuel.
Yeah.
And an extra.
Roy, you're breaking up. Either you're using a cell phone or an internet phone.
I am, and I'm in a right on the edge. So I'll just let you come. But it's the way they just absolutely passed it off. Like, well,
yeah,
get rid of the inflation in food and fuel. And there's no problem.
Right, yeah.
How big is that of a budget?
Yeah, absolutely. It's absolutely crazy, Roy. And you're spot on right. And here's the problem. And you know, and why you are so right about this. Here's the problem, and that is that it's it's almost as if they are saying that they are the network TV news commentators who are earning $500,000 a year salary, and they don't really have to worry about the cost of food or fuel, or the big corporations don't need to worry about the cost of fuel or food, and so it's the big deal. No big deal, right? No problem. And it is a big deal. And you can't factor out the cost of fuel and food because that's the whole point. What are we using our money for? Most people are using a good chunk of their income to pay for housing, food, and fuel. And the price of housing hasn't started to explode yet because interest rates have been so low. Wait 6 months. When this housing bubble pops, and because interest rates start going up and the price and the value of housing starts going down, you're going to see a real mess. Actually, in that case, we may see deflation in the housing market. Yeah, I guess that's the other side. But, it's people borrowing against their homes, and suddenly they'll discover that they owe more than their home is worth, and then the banks are going to start foreclosing because they don't want to get stuck. And then we've been through that before, too. The last time we went through that really hard, really bad in the United States was in the 1970s. When Richard Nixon tried to do nothing anywhere near as bad as what George Walker Bush is doing, but something close. He tried to deficit spend to pay for the war in Vietnam. And the result was an explosion in inflation. I mean, if you think about it, back in 1920, a $20 gold piece would buy a three-piece suit in a good men's clothing store. And you could pay for it with a $20 bill or a $20 gold piece. Now think about this for a minute. Because, back then, $20 bill was redeemable in gold. And a $20 gold piece was actually a coin. And you could buy a suit of clothes with a $20 bill or a $20, or a $20 piece of gold piece. You could buy a three-piece suit. Today, you can still buy a three-piece suit with a $20 gold piece. Because a $20 gold piece today, the value of the gold in a $20 gold piece today is about $340. You can still buy a three-piece suit with it. But you can't buy a three-piece suit with a $20 bill anymore. That's how much the value of our money has gone down. And it's the result of these so-called conservative economic policies. It's not conservative. These crazed economic policies that were pioneered, championed in the Nixon administration, brought us hyperinflation, and then the stagflation that Jimmy Carter inherited, and then the Reagan administration did it again, and now George W. is at it again, and not good for America. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor.
Palisex books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, the Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a WIND feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. This Veterans Day, past and present members of the U.S. Armed Forces are facing many challenges, the most apparent of which is the danger of fighting in Iraq, where 1,100 men and women have lost their lives. Another 4,000 suffered an injury serious enough to retire.
Harvard recently released a study that estimated the number of veterans who have no medical care at about 1.7 million.
David Chasteen is the director of Operation Truth, a nonprofit veterans advocacy group. He served in the Army for 4 years and is now part of the Individual Ready Reserve.
The Bush administration, like a lot of folks, is really good about talking about taking care of soldiers. It's very easy to talk about those sorts of things. It doesn't really cost anything. But there are a lot of guys out there with a lot of real issues.
Chasteen says that persistent underfunding has caused many sick or disabled veterans to have to wait for months for care.
Oftentimes we're dead last on the legislative priority list. And, you know, just as an example, in fiscal year 2005, they plan on cutting 10 VA hospitals and a little shy of $1 billion from the VA budget, even though we're still in a war.
As of January 2004, the VA has announced new rules that exclude hundreds of thousands of vets whose incomes are now considered too high to qualify for benefits.
Under the new eligibility requirements, if you make more than, I think it's $26,000 a year, then you're not going to be eligible for a number of VA benefits that you would have been eligible to before. And this obviously amounts to a pretty significant cut for a number of folks who were counting on that medical care, especially for retired folks.
The Army has even tried to refuse benefits, claiming illnesses are due to pre-existing conditions.
Once you're out of the military, the VA only has to provide medical coverage and for ailments that are related to your service. And it's easy for the VA to say, we don't want to deal with this. We think this is a pre-existing condition, and you're not going to receive treatment.
With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And the sun was shining, and I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving, and the dust clouds rolling.
And welcome back, and here's what happens when your government decides that they're going to borrow from your children and give the money to the top 1 or 2 or 3 or 4% of Americans. We have, the top 1% owns 40% of all the wealth in America. The top 10% owns 90% of all wealth in America. And so we're going to borrow from our grandchildren to give them a larger tax break. And the net result is that we don't have money to do, like, really useful things.
Well, you say he must be talking about that bleeding heart liberal useful stuff like daycare for children.
No, we could, but here's this report. KSL-TV, is a Salt Lake City TV station, where they are a little concerned about this stuff, because this stuff is going to go through Utah on its way to Nevada. This stuff being radioactive waste, reports a federal agency is lacking the funds to test casks that will be used to transport nuclear waste across the country to the underground repository planned for Yucca Mountain in Nevada. But even without that testing, the Federal Nuclear Regulatory Commission has approved the casks for transporting 3,000 tons of waste yearly past more than 11 million people in 45 states, including Utah, to the repository 90 miles north of Las Vegas. NRC Senior Transportation Advisor Earl Easton says the agency doesn't have the money to do real-world testing. Easton says, and I quote, "We're trying to scrape together the funds." End quote. They would like to test these casks. They just can't afford it. But they're going to put radioactive waste in them that has a half-life of a billion years and transport it past 11 million people on railroad cars. The states of Utah and Nevada, by the way, are demanding full testing of the casks. What do you want to bet the feds say? Fine, you want them tested, you pay for it. Utah, I don't believe they even have a nuclear reactor in Utah. Maybe that's why they're so bent out of shape about it there in Salt Lake City. But, you know, welcome to Bushville. Welcome to Bushville. We can do better in the United States, and we will. We just have to wake up a few people, that's all. Tag, you're it. Wake up your friends, neighbors, and family. Thanks to Louise for producing our show today, to Ira for engineering it, to Brad for our music, Shelby for streaming us around the planet, to our sponsors, to Jay, to the folks in our chat room, and to you for listening. I truly appreciate it. Without you, there wouldn't be a program here. See you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Do good.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column.